Freunde, bevor es losgeht, nochmal ganz kurz ein Hinweis in eigener Sache. Wenn ihr plant, euch in Zukunft zum Beispiel eine neue Maschine zu kaufen und wenn ihr richtig Kohle dabei sparen wollt, würde ich euch empfehlen, werft doch mal einen Blick auf unsere Webseite www.tftn-podcast.com oder bei Instagram, unserem Tales from the Needle Account, einfach auf den Link in der Bio klicken. Da findet ihr dann nämlich feinsäuberlich aufgelistet nochmal alle unsere Werbepartner, bei denen ihr richtig fett Kohle sparen könnt. Dazu gehören nämlich zum Beispiel Killer Ink Tattoo Supply, Cheyenne Professional Tattoo Equipment und Call Black Tattoo Supply. Es kommen auch noch mehr dazu, also vorbeigucken lohnt sich. Jetzt wünsche ich euch aber erstmal viel Spaß mit der Folge.
You know, you buy me out, but I'm not signing any non-compete or anything like that. I'm telling you right now, I am starting another company doing exactly this. And he was like, okay, good luck. Okay. So that's when I started World Famous Inc.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to a new episode of the Tales from the Needle Tattoo Podcast. My name is Seb Fury One. I talk to people from the industry and to tattoo artists from all over the world. And today we got a very, very special guest here at the Gods of Ink Tattoo Convention. It's Lou, the founder of World Famous. Lou, what's up?
Hey, how's it going, everybody? Glad to be here in Frankfurt at the Gods of Ink show. It's pretty exciting. Amazing show, very crowded here today. Tons of artists, tons of amazing artists, I should say. Top best in the world and some great brands, you know, tons of brands, you know, big brands like from all around the world that come here. And, you know, it's great to come to this show. It's very similar to the London show, which was a big show for us. We would go out there and meet a lot of the distributors of our products all from all around the world would show up in London. And this is what's going on here in Frankfurt now.
Yeah. This is so cool that Mickey moved everything from London to Frankfurt because it was so unexpected there. But I think I've never had the chance to go to the London Tattoo Convention before because, yeah, I never thought that it was end sometimes, you know? So.
Yeah. It was my favorite one to go to. And just because the people that went there were not just local people or people from London or England or, you know, it was basically everybody who was anybody in the industry from around the world.
Yeah. This is also something that I really like about this convention here, because you will meet like whole of tattoo Germany, especially, and also like probably tattooing Europe here right now. This is so nice. So can you please introduce yourself to the audience so that they know?
Sure. I'm Lou Rubino. Been in the tattoo game all my life. I started out as hanging around my father's tattoo shop. My
really?
Father was an artist. Yeah.
Cool.
So I'm a second generation artist. You know, my father, when I first, you know, I was in high school and I was like, had a huge interest in tattoos and I wanted to be a tattoo artist. And he was kind of like, you know, those days tattoos were looked at very differently than they are today. And it wasn't as much of a great art as it is today. You know, the artists are incredible that are doing tattooing and have gotten involved. But my father kind of was trying to push me away from the industry.
Really?
But yeah. He was like, nah, go do something else, kid. You know, get out of the shop. You don't belong here. You know, go find a better life, you know?
Do something with your life.
Yeah, do something with your life. Become a doctor or a lawyer or something like that, you know? I was like, nah, this is what I want to do. You know, I love it. It's exciting. It's, you know, I used to sit there coloring. My father actually created little coloring books for kids.
Really?
You know, him and one of the artists that worked with him created these coloring books that, you know, so when people would come in, families would come in and the kids would give them a coloring book so that they could color, and they were coloring traditional tattoos. So it was pretty cool. So I grew up coloring these coloring books of traditional tattoos, you know, and you know, it was definitely an interesting place to be, you know. And those days tattooing was very different, you know. The crowds that came in, the culture was very different. It was frowned upon, you know. I mean, you still get some of that today, but nothing like it was back then.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, so in Germany, I can just tell I'm tattooing since 2010 professionally, and I can just tell this was the decade ended where all the biker clubs and everything got their hands on stuff, so then it became more free. I don't know how it was in the States before, but there you weren't allowed to just open up a shop in a city. You just needed to go to the biker boss and said like, here's my work, what do you think?
Yeah, I mean, there was some of that, but then there was, you know, a lot of, you know, there was a lot of freedoms too. You know, my father, you know, opened up his shop, and you know, there were like biker clubs coming in there, and you know, sometimes raising hell, or sometimes, you know, getting tattooed.
Of course.
You know, you got to find your way to work with people, you know, and you know, and you adjust to situations. But yeah, I mean, it was cool, you know, being around the tattoo shop then. And then, you know, finally after I graduated high school, I told my dad that, you know, this is what I'm doing. I'm not going to college. And he was like, okay, let's do it then. You know, and he sat me down in the chair and like showed me the machines. And I had a, you know, very old school style apprenticeship.
Yeah.
I was taking apart coil machines down to the frame and then rebuilding them. And, you know, building new machines with just frames and coils, you know, we even wrapped coils and, you know, shrunk wrap them and, you know, did the whole nine yards, you know. I mean, it was, you know, building needles, like, you know, a lot of these artists today don't realize how easy they have it. Like, we yeah. couldn't just call up somebody and order needles.
Nah.
It didn't exist.
You have to solder them by yourself.
Yeah, we would solder the needles. So, you know, I spent probably the first year just working in the studio, soldering needles, making tubes, building machines, you know, doing all the chores around the studio, you mm-hmm. know. So it was an old school apprenticeship, you know, hand drawing stuff, you know, prepping stencils. Well, we had, you know, acetate plastic stencils.
Yeah, the cool ones.
Yeah. So those were pretty cool. I mean, very difficult to work with, nothing like what it is today. You know, you put the stencil on, and especially with some of these creams that they got today,
yeah.
I mean, they stick on like solid. You can wipe over it 1,000 times and it doesn't go away.
And you use speed stick, right?
yeah. Speed stick was the bomb, yeah. But, you know, when you put that plastic acetate stencil on and you put a little charcoal powder in there and, you know, put that on the body, it, you know, one wipe and it was gone.
Yeah.
And it was like, oh, man, what do I do now? You know, I'm like screwed. So, you know, you got to learn to just even, you know, just freehanded and go. You know, you had no choice. You couldn't stop.
There was no Pinterest around where you can just look at the reference and be like, yeah, okay, I'm doing quite the same.
Yeah. And so it was cool because I got to start at that stage and see the transition, you know, over to, you know, the stencils, over to the art, like Google, you know, like all of a sudden people are coming in with images from Google. Like, you know, it was like, wow, what the hell is this? You know, and people are bringing us stuff. Can you tattoo this? Can you tattoo that? Meanwhile, primarily most people walked in the door and picked the design off the wall.
Yeah.
You know, we had the walls covered with all the tattoos, and somebody would walk in and just say, I want that one. And, you know, we even had like a little price list on there, like with the prices, and you know, they were lettered, and the letter had the price, you know,
like small, medium, and large, also like variations for it.
It depended, like, you know, there were different variations. Yeah, I mean, a lot of like, you know, there was like some old flash, like picture machine flash was one of the real old ones, and then you had like the JD Crow stuff coming in, and that was a little more colorful, but it was simple art, you know. It was really easy to do. And you know, I used to keep a stack of stencils in my station. We had a very busy shop. I mean, it was a walk-in studio. We didn't take appointments. It was first come, first serve.
Oh, cool.
So, you know, people would come in, and, you know, we would open at 12 noon, and I would get there, and there'd be a line of people waiting to get in the door.
Crazy.
To sign the you know, waiting list. So they would get on the list. And, you know, and then we would start tattooing, and it was right away, you know. So I would go home at night, because the other thing is like, we closed at 10. So we were open 12 to 10, but we would stay, we wouldn't close till like 12, 1, 2, 3 in the morning, you
Crazy.
Know, just trying to finish, clear the room of all the tattoos, you know,
all day, every day.
It was a lot of work. And then I would go home. And actually, I had a little setup, a little table where I would solder my needles so that I could work the next day. So I would solder the needles, and then I would go in to the shop in the morning early, clean them up and put them in the autoclave, and, you know, get it ready to work, you know. So, and while that was working in the autoclave, I would, you know, start working on some drawings if I had a couple people that I knew were coming in or something, you know. So, but yeah, it was definitely very different than today's style of tattooing. You know, there were certain tattoos that I would do that because people would walk in and pick the same thing all the time.
Yeah.
So there were certain times I would do the same tattoo over and over, like 5, 6, 7, 8 times in a day, you know, in between other tattoos. But, you know, I would do that same one over and over.
In the end, you wouldn't need to stencil it because you knew it before, you know?
Yeah. I mean, I even remember, like, there was this one rose on the wall. It was a J.D. Crow sheet, and it had a bunch of roses on it. And it was in our shop, we had, like, the stencils under a file, you know, like a number on the sheet.
Yeah.
It was sheet number 338.
Okay, cool.
Yeah, it was sheet number 338, and letter D was like the price on it. I remember 338D. I had a stack of those in my station just because it was so common. Every woman walked in and went, I want that one.
Yeah.
And, you know, that was the thing too. It was like mostly back then, most women got tiny tattoos, you know, they didn't get
on the chest, right? There's little devils and stuff.
Yeah. On the chest or on the hip, you know, or on the ass, you know, so it was always, you know, these tiny little tattoos. And then, you know, I think that the big thing that changed that was the, tramp stamp tattoos.
Yeah.
You know, when people started coming in and getting
the 90s.
Yeah, the lower back small tattoos, and then they became bigger and bigger and bigger, and before you know it, they became pretty large tattoos, you know. And then from there I saw a lot of females getting more tattoos and getting them bigger in different locations, and, you know, down the leg and, you know, shoulders, and, you know, so and then you started getting them on the arms. But, you know, when I first started, it was mostly men getting tattooed.
Mm-hmm.
And then when the tramp stamp phase started, it became more and more women getting tattooed. So I think that was a big evolution time in tattooing where, you know, it changed over to just being, you know, at some point it got to like 50-50, you know, men and women. And then, you know, sometimes it was even more women getting tattooed in the shop than men. So I think that was a big transition time. Yeah, that was like the 90s. I remember tribal, too, was like a big thing.
And yeah.
Oh, man, I used to hate the tribal armbands.
But they are also coming back. They just look pretty different now because they are not that black and solid anymore, but they are more decent. You know, they look like prison tattoos now.
Yeah.
This is what how they like it now.
Yeah. And then there was the barbed wire, you know, around the arm, and people get
Pamela Anderson represented.
Oh yeah, once she got that tattoo, it was like over. Everybody wanted it, you know. But yeah, the tribal. I remember we had this one guy who used to come into the shop, and he was just covered in tribal work. I mean, like head to toe. And I mean, back then, you know, you didn't see as many people that covered in tattoos.
That was a statement.
Yeah, it was a big statement. And then we had this other kid, because we started doing piercing in the studio in the 90s, too. And we had this kid who came in and got a ton of piercings. And, I mean, we put like 50 holes in his face, you know. And, we called him Holy Boy.
Because he was shining all the time.
He was like, you know, he just had all these holes in his face. And he was like, he was a young kid. He was only like 19, 20 years old, you know, and he was like covered in holes. But, yeah, it was funny. We had like nicknames for all the customers that used to come in. And then, you know, I found as later on, it started, you know, growing more and more popular tattoos. And, you know, we had all different people coming in. And then you started getting like, you know, regular businessmen coming in and, you know, taking off their suits and getting tattooed. And, you
and
know,
then you see the Japanese bodysuit that is
back. Yep. And, you know, we used to get a lot of older men that would come in that had like no tattoos and start getting tattooed at like, you know, 60 years old. And then, you know, by the time they're 70, they're like covered, you know. So it was cool, you know, to see that, you know, evolution and change and all this big work starting to happen. I mean, then much later on came out the TV shows and everything. Mm-hmm. And I think that really changed a lot too in the industry. Just Definitely. The whole, you know, people getting to see what's going on in the shops a little bit more and see the art, you know, because, you know, years ago, like, people didn't look at it as much of an art as they do today, you know. I mean, it's definitely an amazing art. I mean, there's some really talented, amazing artists, and it's come a long way. You know, and I always like to do things that were to try and bring the tattoo industry more out into the public, you know, into the face and the eyes of the public.
Yeah.
You know, kind of like the TV shows did. I had opened one studio in a mall, you know, so that was kind of cool. You know, you had people that were going there shopping in the mall, and they would walk into the studio and take a look because it was easy to. So to go in our other studio that my father originally started, it was a separate building. You had to drive, pull into the parking lot.
Oh, okay.
Okay, get out of the car, go into the studio. And it was scary, you know, like, you know, you'd never been in a tattoo parlor before, and you just see this building that's, you know.
What was the name of the shop?
Tattoo Luz.
Tattoo Luz. Oh, yeah, cool.
Yeah. So, and you couldn't even see inside. There wasn't, like, windows that you could see inside. There was, like, a sign hanging in the window and stuff, you know. So it was a little scary for people, and that kind of, like, you know, being in the mall kind of, like, you know, opened their eyes a little bit to it, so... That was cool. And then I had a little bit later on, I had opened up a tattoo studio inside the sports arena with the New York Islanders hockey team.
Oh, okay.
So that was a cool experience. And again,
you just managed this, or do you also work there by yourself? Like,
yeah, no, I used to work there, manage it, you know. Mm-hmm.
With working, I mean like tattooing.
Oh yeah, no, we tattooed there. Oh, okay. Yeah. No, so it was all over, like, hockey news, all over. It was on ESPN.
Cool.
Sports Illustrated did a story on it. It was the first ever tattoo parlor inside a professional sports arena.
I haven't heard from that before, that it's even possible to open up a studio there, but why not, you know?
Yeah. So the way it was in the Nassau Coliseum in Long Island, New York, and the New York Islander hockey team played there. And, you know, the way the stadium was, it had a big circle around the outside, and... You know, that was like your hallway to get to your seats, you know? And they had all the vendors out there, like the hot dogs and, you know, food, beers
and stuff,
you know? And we set up right in that circle. And it was cool because I designed this shop to look like a penalty box. I called it the penalty box.
Yeah, perfect. That's really cool.
So, you know, we made it like a penalty box. It had this wall around it. And, you know, you had to open up the gate just like a penalty box to walk into it. And it was cool because people would come to these games. And in the beginning, I was like, how many people are really going to get tattooed at the game? But they loved it.
Yeah.
They absolutely loved it. And they were able to, you know, we made up a whole bunch of flash designs of New York Islanders, you know, logos with hockey sticks and all kinds of different designs like that. And, the players even got tattooed too, like a lot of the Islander hockey players.
Before the game, you just tattooed the fans. Afterwards, the team. You know?
Yeah. So it was cool. And then they would sign autographs while they were getting tattooed and stuff. So people would hang around and nice. Watch them get tattooed. So and it was cool because you had, like, you know, these people are coming and paying for a ticket to watch a game, and there were TVs out in the circle, and they would watch it on that TV while they're getting tattooed. So it's, like, funny that they're paying for a ticket and they're sitting there getting tattooed, watching it on TV.
I mean, they're supporting their team, so why not?
But that was a lot of fun. You know, we had a really good time with it, and you know, we did a lot of promotion with that, and, you know, it was cool. I did some unique promotions with my studio. We did a promotion setup we didn't tattoo at. At the Jones Beach Amphitheater, you know, so that was like it's like a big concert hall, in New York, and it's, on the beach, and it's open air.
Yeah.
And, I mean, many major bands are all playing there and stuff. And we used to go there and just, you know, we had merch that we would sell, and, you know, it was interesting because it was always, like, sunny in the daytime, and it was hot. So people would get there and it would be warm. And then as soon as that sun went down, it got cold. So we started selling sweatshirts.
Yeah, it's opportunistic, you would call it.
But they had our logo with a studio on it. So, you know, people were walking around, like, filling the stadium with logos of our tattoo studio. So it was a great way of advertising.
Perfect.
You know? And, you know, social media wasn't big back then. We didn't have all these social media platforms. You know, maybe a little MySpace.
I even remember MySpace. It was there for our for bands and stuff. You know, we used it there back in the days. No band had like a website. Everybody had like MySpace.com/ and then the band name.
Yeah.
But really cool that you did all this effort before social media, because it sounds like, have you ever slept in that phase? Like, because it seems like you opened this up, then you had that idea. And how was it like to manage all of this?
Yeah, I mean, it was a lot to manage. I had a lot of artists working for me. I ended up having 7 studios in Long Island, New York. And a lot of artists, you know, a lot of artists in and out. And actually, one thing that I started doing was, helping some international artists come to the United States, you know, so helping them to get O-1 work visas. Mm-hmm. And, you know, it was the early days of that, because now there's like companies that do that, you know. But I used to just support the artist myself. And we had a legal team, an immigration legal team that, you know, was out of New York that we worked together with. And, you know, we used to bring the artist in, and I had a lot of great artists come from other countries that, you know, really it became a big part of their career to be able to do that. So it was, you know, definitely great to travel in the industry too. That's what I always loved about this industry is being able to, you know, do your art and travel around the world and, you know, get to meet different people from all over the world and have friends like everywhere. It's really awesome.
It also gives you kind of like inspiration, you know, like when you visit an event like this here and you meet just your friends and stuff, it's just, you come back with a ton of new ideas, of new inspiration and everything. And this is what I love about it. Because when I talk to people that are in the industry for so long, and even tattoo artists or whatever, most of them be like, I don't go on conventions anymore and I'm done with it, you know, also with the scene and everything. But this is something that is pretty much essential for me as an artist, because like this is the stuff that I love about tattooing. This is what makes it different compared to other jobs, because like if I'm just an industry worker, it's pretty hard for me to do some guest spots in another city, you know. Mm-hmm. But like as a tattoo artist, it's really cool to do it like that.
Yeah, I mean, I think, you know, it really opens your eyes to, like, you know, just seeing, number one, different cultures.
Yeah.
You know, and, you know, of course, different styles of art and learning from each other, I think, is really important. Mm-hmm. You know, and, you know, just traveling is just such a great thing. I mean, I did it for a long time. I traveled all around the world.
I bet still, right?
Yeah. I mean, in COVID, it slowed down a lot, you know, and I'm just starting to really get back into it more, you know. But pre-COVID, I was, you know, with the Ink brand, I was all over the world. I would be, you know, one weekend in Europe, the next weekend in South America, you know, Asia, China, you know, South Asia, and then I'd be in Russia, or, you know, it was a lot of traveling. And
what was your favorite part in traveling so far? Like, where would you like to go?
So I really enjoy Europe. You know, I spent a lot of time in Italy, started, actually the first convention that I did out of the United States with the Ink Company was Milan Tattoo Convention.
Really?
Yeah.
Okay.
And it was, you know, really eye-opening for me, and it was fantastic. And it was really the start of, you know, growing my brand. So, you know, that it was, I met a couple tattoo artists from Italy on social media, and that's how it started, you know. And then they're like, yeah, you should come. Milan's a great show. And
it is.
Yeah. And I've been there every year since. So.
Also this year?
Yeah. Huh.
So we probably met because I was there too.
Yep. Yeah. I mean, it's an amazing show. So I've always enjoyed that. And I think London, you know, those were my two favorite shows to go to. But, you know, Italy, I remember when it was in the hotel years ago, and it was like, it was crazy. I mean, it was so busy. You couldn't even walk in there, you know, and the aisles were very small, and it was very different because of the hotel instead of being in a big exposition center, you know. But it was always fun because, you know, you hung out in the lobby of the hotel and you got to meet so many great artists and, you know, distributors and supply companies and brands from all around the world were there, you know. So that was a great place, you know, for uniting people together from the industry. But, you know, like that's why I traveled. I mean, I just really like to meet different artists and, you know, get to know them and introduce them to my brand, of course. And, same with distributors, you know, really building that relationship with our distributors and, you know, supporting them as they're supporting us with the brand and, you know, just trying to help, grow it and, you know, give the artists what they need. I think that's always been an important thing to me is, you know, making something that the artists need and want and, you know, you do things that are going to help improve the artist and improve their work and, you know, help improve the industry, you know. So I think that that's always been something that's been a focus of mine is, you know, how do we make this industry better? How do we make improvements on the products in the industry? How do we grow it, you know, as an industry in a whole?
And I mean, you're doing more than good because like World Famous is one of the top three world brands on the market right now. And it's not around for that long, right?
I started
compared to the other ones.
Yeah. I mean, I started in 2012.
Really? 2012?
Yeah.
How was the, for me, it's pretty interesting because like I'm a tattoo artist, so I know about the scene and stuff, but but when was the idea born where you wanted like, okay, I'm doing colors?
So, I mean, that goes back. As I told you, I had 7 studios in Long Island, New York. And back then it was very hard to get supplies, you know, so there wasn't really much out there. And I had originally started another brand. Well, and Kurosumi was one of them. I had 2 brands.
Oh, really? Back
years ago. You know, I had, I could just say it was Mom's Ink, Millennium Colors.
I remember, yeah.
Yeah, that was my original brand I started. And I had a partner, and later on we split up, and that's when I started World Famous Ink. So, it wasn't that I started in 2012 doing ink or, you know, in this, you know, business. So I owned Technical Tattoo Supply back then.
Okay.
Out of New York. And
it's crazy, so many stuff, 7 studios, like a supply, but it's like a complete ecosystem, you know. This is what I like about it.
Well, that's what it was. It was like there was a huge need for it, like I said, you know. So, you know, I had these 7 studios and it was like so hard, you know. Like, I mean, first off, needles, we were all soldering needles and everything, and then inks, like we were mixing inks in the back of the studio. And I remember at one point there was one company that came out with some inks, and I would call them up and say, hey, you know, I want to buy, you know, a couple bottles. Like, and they had these huge bottles, like 16-ounce, you know, bottles and stuff. It's like, yeah, I need a couple 16-ounce whites, you know. Can you help me out? And they're like,
I'm coming back for more next week.
Yeah. They're like, it's about a 6-month waiting list. I was like, are you kidding me? Forget it. I'll make it myself. I can't wait 6 months, you know? So, that's what we would do. And, you know, I saw that as a great opportunity and a great need. And, you know, that's when, Mom's Colors were born, you know? And, I started that, actually started doing all my research in like 1995, 96. And then, I opened up in 1998 in New York City. So now, I don't know if you know this, but tattooing was illegal
in
New York City until 1998. So back in the 60s, there was some, you know, like, I don't know, it was like some, the rumor was that some judge's daughter got tattooed and this whole big thing happened. And it was like, you know, an hepatitis scare or something, you know, so it was like, you know, the thing was, as everybody was said from the industry back then, that it was like some judge's daughter got tattooed. He got pissed off and he closed down, literally closed down tattooing in New York City. Right? Completely banned it. So, you know, there was shops there in, you know, the 80s, 90s, you know, underground though. They were like, you know, very private, you know.
Like in Japan nowadays.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. So, you know, then, you know, in the 90s, like 96, 97, it was like there was talks about, you know, legalizing it. And I actually, you know, went down to the Department of Health. They had a bunch of conferences about it and, you know, bringing the industry together and asking questions and talking to people. And so I was pretty heavily involved in that. And then in 1998, we finally got it legalized, you know, and it was great. And I said, you know what? Now that tattooing is legal in New York City, I'm going to open up a store in New York City with the ink and supplies and, you know, machines. We were building machines there. And, you know, it was great. You know, we had all these new shops popping up everywhere in New York City. And then, the cool thing too was that, you know, of course, everybody goes to visit New York City. Who doesn't?
Yeah.
So we would have all these artists that would come in from different countries and they would come visit and stop in the studio and, you know, come check out our supplies and equipment. And, you know, then I realized, you know, being in New York City, you don't get much for your money, you know, when you're talking about space.
Probably.
So I had this little...
I've seen the memes.
Yeah, I had this little tiny... Yeah, right. I had this little tiny store and I was paying pretty big rent to keep this store alive. And
10 grand for 2 square meters.
And I ended up moving the supply company out to Long Island, you know, where my studios were. And... you know, then we started shipping a lot. So I realized that, you know, it was better to just ship it to the artist. You know, in New York, they had to take a subway or you couldn't park. There was like nowhere to park, you know. So now I was able to just start shipping, you know, UPS, FedEx, you know, post office, whatever it may be. And then I, you know, I had gotten a website and set up a website. You know, this is the beginning of the internet, you know, in the late 90s, you know. So, yeah, it was one of the first, you know, tattoo websites, you know, for supplies and stuff. And artists would go on there and buy their stuff. And so, yeah, I mean, that was how I got started in the supply company. You know, I had, you know, and I had all kinds of supplies, everything, you know, and you know, like all the medical supplies and everything a tattoo parlor needed eventually, little by little growing it. And then, me and my partner just started shifting different directions and, you know, I wanted to continue to grow and he really wasn't like, he just had a different mindset, you know? So we decided to part ways and, you know, and then I, left. Well, I kind of told him like, you buy me out or I buy you out. And I, you know, like I wanted to take the company, but, you know, honestly, he was a little, you know, big headed, but he didn't want to, part with it. And, he probably should have. But, you know, I told him, okay, I'll leave, you know, you buy me out and, but I'm not signing any non-compete or anything like that. I'm telling you right now, I am starting another company doing exactly this. And he was like, okay, good luck. Okay. So that's when I started World Famous Inc. And I actually took Kurosumi with me. That was, you know, one of the brands that we had at Technical Tattoo School.
Crazy. I didn't knew this before because it's always the world of tattooing is so small and I didn't realize that it's actually that small, you know?
Yeah, yeah, yeah. So, yeah, so then you know, when I left and I started World Famous Inc., I you know, I had a lot of connections already around the world because I, you know, had all my distributors and, you know, I started little by little just converting people over to World Famous. And then you know, and then I started doing some heavy travel and just traveling around, building those relationships with the distributors, with the artists, and really just growing the brand country by country. And like I said, Milan Tattoo Convention was really what opened my eyes to the rest of the world.
How is it for the manufacturing process? Because obviously when you are the CEO, you're just traveling around doing PR stuff, building networks and everything. But how is it like, have you had to build like your own manufacturer? Was it like that you just asked like the, I'm lacking the word for it. So was, were there like color manufacturers for probably different branches where you just called and be like, yeah, I want to set this product on the market. Like, can you do this for me, or how does it work?
Mm-hmm. Good question. So, we have our own factory, mm-hmm. okay, and we manufacture our colors. But in the beginning, it was like we basically started small and started in like a garage.
You know? Really?
Yeah. You know, so it was just, very small and just...
This is cool about America, because in Germany, this would never going to be happening because we have so many regulations and
stuff. Well, now there is, but, yeah. Back then there wasn't, So in the way beginning, when I started World Famous, it was definitely more evolved. But, mm. When I started my first company, it was very small. And, I had done a bunch of research, and I actually stopped in a company on Long Island that did some pigment dispersions. I was talking to them, and nobody wanted nothing to do with the tattoo industry though. they were like, oh, that's a liability, we want nothing to do with that. So the guy ended up like giving me a lot of information, mm-hmm. so I was able to absorb tons of information from this guy, and he wound up giving me a milling machine too.
Really?
Yeah. He's like, I got an old mill back there, I'll give it to you. Like,
such a nice guy.
Yeah, it was really, really nice of him to do that. And
you're still in contact?
No, that was many years ago. Yeah, I should go back and see if that guy's still around.
You should invite him just over here, see what I have done.
See what has happened. Yeah, it's true. It was a very long time ago. But so that was like how it first started. And then I went to another company, and I started talking to them about helping us out and, making some dispersions for us, right? Mm-hmm. And again, the same thing happened. Like, they actually did a lot of research. They had a lab. They had the guy in a lab, and he did a lot of research and did a lot of work on the colors. And then the company decided, the legal department told them, don't do it. don't get involved in the tattoo industry. So I wound up, the funny part is I wound up talking to the guy in a lab, and I hired him.
You'd be like, okay, they forbid you. Okay, I hire you.
Yeah. So he was all into it. He wanted to start this up and get it going. Cool. He was pissed off because he did so much work on it, mm. and then they wouldn't let him do it. So he was like really upset.
I think this is the kind of people you need when you want to open up a business. People that are on fire for the topic, that are like, no matter what, I'm going to do it.
Yep. So that was like the start of like Moms and Kurosumi back then. And, we opened a small facility, and then, it became bigger and bigger and bigger over the years. And then when I left and opened World Famous, we started, I hooked up with, I hired a guy who was, manufacturing. Actually, I worked first a little bit with a third party who was helping us out, doing some contract mm-hmm. manufacturing. And then the guy who ran everything there wound up leaving and coming with me. So then I opened my own facility, doing the pigments and stuff there. And he's been fantastic, and he's been with me since, He was like thinking about leaving and opening up his own dispersion company. And, he had reached out to me, and he's like, what do you think? Can we do something? And I'm like, yeah, let's go. Come on.
Cool.
So, he helped me out with, getting World Famous going. And, so it was good because I got to do all the traveling. He ran the facility, mm-hmm. Manufacturing. And, as we grew, we just kept, moving to different locations, growing the factory and bigger and bigger. And
was it like profitable from the first time, or was it like, okay, you needed to spend like 1 or 2 years until it became?
Yeah. I mean, it takes time, mm-hmm. There's good profit in inks, but you got to spend a lot of money on marketing and stuff like
also
that.
Also manufacturing, I bet.
Yeah, especially in the beginning, though. Mm-hmm. you know, you start off the first few years of your company and you're just like in negative, you know, it's like, oh crap, you know, I hope this turns around, you know,
everybody's then, like, are you really sure you want to do this? And you'd be like, trust me.
Yeah. So, well, you know, when you have passion and you know that you can succeed and you really want to strive for being something great and making a difference in the industry and just having, you know, I've always concentrated on quality, always wanted best of the best quality. Nothing else works. So, you know, knowing that that was my focus and that's what we were going to do and we were going to build relationships with distributors and artists and, you know, give them great quality inks and, you know, make a difference, you know, so that's what makes success is making a difference.
And I mean, at least like you, when you had like that amount of studios, also the relationship with international artists, I think it's way easier to do it when you are already a part of the scene than when you just come from somewhere else and then try to get a foot in there and don't know how the network itself works and everything.
Yeah, exactly. You know, just, I mean, being a tattoo artist and knowing how the ink works and, you know, I mean, my lab guy, you know, he would come sit with me while I tattooed and I would, you know, he'd make me samples and I would work with them and, you know, we'd go back and forth and I'd tell him, nah, it's got to be a little thinner, thicker, you know, or something's not working right. Let's fix this. Let's figure out how to do this. And that's how, you know, we basically built it. I mean, you know, you build the product based on how it worked, you know, and how well it went in the skin.
Learning by doing.
Right. And you know, how it healed was a big thing. So, you know, I wanted to make a product that went in the skin easier, you know, because think about it, there's less trauma to the skin, you know, so if it goes in easier, you got less trauma, you can pack it really well and solid. And, you know, a product that heals very well, heals quickly, you know, is important too. So, you know, that's how I made the best product I could, was just to sit there tattooing and, you know, figuring it out together with my scientist guy, you know. So we worked on it together and, you know, then we started giving out samples to different artists and let them test and get the feedback, you know. Like, you know, nothing's perfect, you know, especially when you're first starting, you know. It's like, how do we make improvements? How do we make it better? And you know, even today, like, it's always continuous improvement, you know, that we're doing. And you're always making, you know, any improvements that you can. Of course, you got regulations that's going to change
especially
things
in
up.
The European Union.
you'll get regulations that'll throw a wrench in everything. And then you got to start all over from scratch.
Yeah.
Like the new REACH regulations. But
I think like you guys were one of the first companies that already had like this, what's it called? The Limitless, right?
Yeah.
The Limitless series.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, we were definitely the first to market, I think, in colors, you know. And yeah, it was a lot of hard work, though. I will tell you, my team, like, they kicked ass, you know. And we spent, you know, a full year, like the regulations came out, and then they gave us a full year to comply, you know,
which is not too much.
It's not really a lot when you think about it, because you're redoing everything, you know. You reformulated everything from scratch. So and you had to figure out all these, you know, chemicals and, you know, everything that, you know, you can't have in the ink. And you know we're using pigments, so, you know, you got to do all this testing on the pigments and find the right pigments that are going to work and not, you know, have like heavy metals, aromatic amines, or, you know, anything in it that's going to be against the REACH regulations, you know. And then, you know, every ingredient that goes in there has to be, you know, vetted and tested and, you know, making sure that everything passes before you start putting formulas together.
Yeah. Also, like, I imagine that you need to, like, a trial phase where you can just hand it out to artists and be like, here, please test it out. And then you see it healed after 1 month, 2 months, 6 months, whatever.
Yeah, that was the biggest challenge, actually, because, you know, we had wrote letters, you know, during the regulation changes when they were trying to do it, that, you know, giving us only 1 year is not enough time for testing, you know.
Probably, you know, if you just need to do the testing in a year, it's probably okay, but not if you also need to do the development in the year.
Right, right, right. All the R&D work that goes into it prior to getting into the skin and, you know, seeing how it reacts in the skin, you know, is a big deal. And, you know, like, you know, 1 year was a very short time to be able to do that. Mm-hmm. But like I said, our team, you know, at this point, you know, the team was much larger. So I had a, you know, like 5-person R&D team that was, you know, working on it 24/7 for a year. Wow. You know, I mean, literally, that's all they did. I mean, and they put in a lot of extra hours, overtime, weekends, you know, they worked really hard on it. And, you know, everybody wanted to get to that goal. And, you know, I mean, honestly, we've incentivized the team to make it happen and, you know, made sure that they were taken care of for all their hard work. And, you know, we were able to get there, but, you know, it was definitely, I'm not going to say it was easy, you know, it was definitely a very, very big challenge. And, you know, and then you see things today too, like where, you know, I thought this new regulation for REACH would be just like, okay, this is the regulation for all of Europe. Because the biggest challenge always in Europe is that each country has different regulations. Yeah. So with the RACEAP 2003, 2008 that they had previously that were like the suggested guidelines for, you know, manufacturing inks, each country would have a different rule on it or a different law. And it was like...
And you can just build a factory for each country. You know?
Yeah, yeah, yeah. So, but now we're seeing that, like, you know, there still is other rules in each country. So you still, you can't just go by, you know, the REACH regulation that you think is all of Europe because each country has like different regulations.
Yeah.
So, you know, so it's definitely a big challenge. I would prefer it to be more of a unified regulation this way.
All of us do.
Yeah. I mean, you know what you're up against in every single country where, you know, I mean, it gets very difficult like that. And then even like USA and, you know, Canada and, you know, we have like different regulations in different places. Then you got Brazil is a whole nother story. You
but
know,
is it like the formula? It's just the limitless series and the regular series, right? There's no difference in between the countries, right?
No, no, no. So yeah, you just have the classic formula and then the, limitless. So the limitless we created, just for Europe, you know, so it's only sold in Europe. It's not sold anywhere else. But, you know, we've thought about selling it other places and, but it's just confusing to artists. Like, why have, you know, you have, you know, all these colors, you know, I mean, we got like, hundreds and hundreds of colors in each line, you know?
Yeah.
So it's like, now you're just going to confuse people even more by selling multiple, you know, formulas in different, you know, in the same country, you know? So, yeah, we decided to just keep it as a separate thing, you know, just all of Europe gets this formula and the rest of the world has the other formula.
Which is kind of like ridiculous that you have like Europe and the rest of the world.
Yeah. 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 That's exactly what it is. It really is. It's not, you know, there is nowhere else that has, you know, these kind of stringent regulations. Brazil has, it's more of, like getting the, doing all this work to get an AN visa to import to Brazil. So, we might need the European formula for that. We haven't worked on that. It's been something that it's always been on the back burner for me, to work on. We have a lot of artists in Brazil that are always asking for the products.
I think the market itself is also like quite small because when you want to, distribute everything to Europe, of course, it's way bigger. So the value is also more than just Brazil.
Right, right, right. Definitely. Yeah. I mean, Brazil's a big country. Yeah. So, you know, I think it's got a decent market there, but yeah, I mean, Europe's much bigger. United States is a awesome market for us. And, you know, we're seeing a lot of, you know, the market of tattooing really just growing in Asia too for us, you know, and, you know, so I think, all around the world though, for us, you know, it's USA and Europe is, top.
Yeah. What are the next plans for a world famous? So what's the next plan on the next milestone that we are hitting?
So, Yeah, I mean, we're just always looking ahead and just seeing what the future is going to bring and, you know, working with new artists. So we got some great new artists that will be appearing on the team. And
really excited for it.
Yeah, yeah. So I can't make any announcements yet, but and we're going to be doing some new sets. I don't know if you saw the Sasha O'Haron set we just came out with that, you know, we introduced here at the show at Gods of Ink.
Okay.
And, yeah, that's a set that we've been working on for quite some time. And we did a really beautiful presentation box, you know, it came out really nice. And people are really checking it out. I mean, they haven't, you know, not too many people have used it yet, besides Sasha's been using it for quite a while. Mm. And he gave it out to some friends of his, and they've been using it for like a year. So, you know, we did a lot of testing. And that's an example. Like, you know, like literally we did a lot of testing on the colors and, you know, and the thickness and viscosities of it. And, you know, Sasha was very particular. I mean, he's a very particular person. And he's like, I want it, you know, to be a little bit thicker, a little bit this, a little bit that, you know, and we worked on it, developing that for like a couple of years.
Crazy.
And then he's been testing it for a year, you know, and but his friends have been testing it. So, but it makes sense, right?
Yeah, I mean, this is something that you want, you know, because if you want to hand out like samples to an artist, you don't want him to say, yeah, that's the best, and still use something else. But you want him to have an honest opinion and just talk to it, you know?
Right. Yeah, so, I mean, he was very passionate about it, and, you know, and he came to our facility, and we worked, you know, with the R&D team, you know, mixing colors and trying to figure out, you know, the best formula for him. And yeah, I mean, he's a great guy to work with. But yeah, we got some other, you know, great artists that are going to be joining the team and that we're working already on their ink sets.
Do they also come to the factory and check everything out there and just mix it by themselves, or to get a feeling for it?
Sometimes, not always, but yeah, we like to get them out there and you know, work together, like get to know the R&D team and really, you know, work with them and figure it out together. But you know, sometimes it's difficult with, you know, people being in different countries. But
yeah, of course,
if not, it's just a lot of communication back and forth, and a lot of shipping back and forth of different samples to test, and till we finally get them to say that's the one.
That's the one. Or just say, you know what, I thought about it, let's do something completely different.
yeah it does happen.
Really?
Yeah. I mean, you know,
you're getting phone calls and be like, you know, Lou, I thought about it. I know we spent like 3 years for it, but can we switch it completely?
It does happen. It for sure, you know, can happen. I've seen it all, believe me.
I guess, yeah, right. So cool. How big is World Famous itself? How many employees does World Famous have?
World Famous has 100 employees.
100 employees?
Yeah, yeah.
That's a lot.
Yeah. Yep. Yeah, we got a great team, you know, from the factory manufacturing to, you know, logistics and, you know, bottling. There's a lot of people in the bottling department and labeling. And then, you know, even just office and marketing team.
And everything is produced in the USA, right? Also the European colors and everything.
Yep. Yeah. I would love to, you know, I would love to manufacture the European stuff in Europe, you know, we'll figure that out one day. But, yeah, right now everything is made in the USA and shipped here. So we, you know, we also have the convention teams, like we have the team here in Europe. So we have a specific team that just does European shows.
So cool.
And then we have a team that does shows all across the United States. And we have a team for South America.
Mm-hmm.
And we actually now have a couple of guys who work for us in China who are starting to do some shows and, you know, going around and meeting artists and, you know, supporting the artist and, you know, doing some sales with distributors. So, yeah, so we're building the team more and more every day.
This is so cool to hear it from somebody that came from scratch and did like such a big impact, not also on the scene, but also like on a business base, you know, because when you have to administrate 100 people, different teams and everything, how is like the regular days of yours? So how do you, like I asked it before, do you sleep?
Yeah. I mean, I sleep pretty good usually because, you know, work hard all the time and crash. Yeah. Until I crash. And then, but I'm a very early person, early bird, you know. I wake up usually I'm up at like 4 o'clock in the morning.
Really?
Yeah. And I start my day, you know, sending out emails and reading emails and while I'm drinking my coffee. And then, and then the day progresses. And then there's a lot of meetings and stuff that go on. And, but I have a great management team. So,
cool.
You know, the managers, you know, handle day to day operations now at this point.
Yeah,
you know,
of course.
I'm able to, just be at a very high level and make high level decisions. But I always work with the marketing team. And, you know, because, you know, I want to make sure that they understand also, you know, coming from the industry and being an artist, you know, like sometimes marketing teams will do some crazy things and I'm like, no.
Yeah, definitely not.
I'm like, that doesn't go. Get rid of it. So you got to definitely be careful and be on
because
top of that.
The scene is so traditional. You wouldn't expect it from us because we are so heavily tattooed and everything. And some of the guys are punks and everything. But there it's just like, yeah, you know, we are kind of traditional when it comes to the values of tattooing.
Exactly. Yeah, definitely. You know, yeah, just, you know, making sure that, everybody's keeping in line. And I try to hire, you know, some industry people too, like, you know, like, Frosty that works for me here at the conventions. Like he oversees now all the conventions, United States and Europe and South America. He oversees them all. Like he's like the top guy in the conventions now. And, he was a tattoo artist and then, you know, he even pierced and then he started in my warehouse. So I love to see people elevate through the company too.
Sure.
He started in the warehouse, just doing shipping of some products and worked his way up to like a warehouse manager. And then he managed, customer service a little bit. And he worked conventions for a while. Previous to, you know, working as a warehouse manager. And I actually brought him from the conventions back to the warehouse because I needed a good manager and somebody who knows and understands the industry. And then, you know, I needed somebody to head the, tattoo conventions. And I was like, all right, we got a good industry guy here, Frosty. So he's going to go, take care of that. So I put him in that position. But, yeah, it's really cool to see, you know, and I have employees that work for me in the manufacturing that have been there since day one of the company.
Cool. Oh, so, this is really cool.
Yeah, really, really cool. And also a salesman that's been with me since day one. So when I moved my company from New York to South Carolina, at that time I had like 25 employees. And I was like, oh, how am I going to do this? You know, it all started with my wife wanting to get to warmer weather and get out of New York. And I'm like, all right, well.
Just a bunch of crazy people around. Let's move.
Yeah. Well, we wanted to get to warmer weather, but we didn't really care for Florida. So we were like, let's just go halfway in the middle. So we went to Carolinas. And I went into my office and I said to all my employees, I gathered everybody up and I said, hey, listen, I'm thinking about moving the company to the Carolinas. You all want to come with me? And everybody was like, yeah, let's go.
Sure.
I was like,
thought you never asked.
Wow, that's great. I was like, this makes it so much easier for me. So I don't have to worry about hiring new people, you know, or anything like that. And you know, like I got loyalty to my people too, because they've been with me a long time and they work
pretty
hard.
Rare.
They work very hard. And, you know, I really appreciate them and take care of them too, you know, so, you know, and they respect me, you know, so, it's a great thing. And they all picked up and moved, you know, you know, when we first started talking about it, it was like, we all want to go. And then I went down to Carolinas. I looked around. I was like, I wasn't really sure. And I came back and then they started pushing me. When are we going? You know, I mean, like, think about it, you know, cost of living in New York is much higher, you know, so they were able to move to the Carolinas and, you know, live more affordably and, and buy houses and stuff that they couldn't do in New York, you know? So, it was a big change of life for the positive for everybody, you know? And, you know, when they started pushing me, my head sales guy there, Tony, he was like, don't push him too hard because when he says go, it's going to happen fast.
Yeah, of course.
And that's exactly what happened. So I was like, all right, fine. I'll go down again. I went down. I looked. I found the building that we're in right now still. And I came back and I'm like, okay, we got 2 months. You got to move. And everybody was just like, okay.
Get your stuff in order.
Yeah. I said, everybody, like, take a week off and go take turns taking a week off and go look in the Carolinas, find somewhere to live and pack your shit and let's get out of here.
Did you stop tattooing or do you still do it occasionally?
Yeah, it got to a point at one point where I had to make a decision, you know. It was for tattooing on a regular basis, you know. It was just very difficult to run the whole company and grow the company and be in the tattoo chair because, you know, you got to make a lot of phone calls for business and always on the phone. And it's not fair to your client either if you're sitting there on the phone the whole time while you're tattooing them. So, you know, it started out, that's how it was. It was like, I'm on the phone, I'm tattooing, I'm like going back and forth, I'm taking breaks with phone calls. And, you know, so it was rough. And then finally I had to, first I started tattooing only on the weekends. So I would run the company during the week and then tattoo on the weekends, and then afterwards I had to make a decision that, you know, I need quality of life a little bit too, you know. And you know, me and my wife are together like 30 years now. Yeah, we have 3 children, so you know, it's great to, you know, you got to have that family life, you have to have that work life balance. Yeah. And you know, try and figure out what works best to be able to enjoy the family and enjoy life also.
Yeah,
you know?
True.
Because, you know, life is short, you know. I mean, and the older you get, the more you start to think about that, and you start, you know, you start seeing friends and people that pass away or something, and something happens and you get scared and you start to think about it like, oh man, I gotta make sure that you know, enjoying my life and my family too.
Yeah, because hustling is fun, but it's also like there's not much you have when you just pass, you know, then
yeah,
nothing
yeah.
you can take with you.
Yeah. So yeah, I mean, and once in a while I try and like do a little tattoo here or there. And
I have an idea for the people that are still at World Famous, you know, from day one. Once World Famous hits 20 years, everybody gets logo tattooed by you.
Yeah, that's cool.
Something like
that. We actually, I was in Italy at the Milan Tattoo Convention one time, and one of the artists was doing a grand opening party at his studio. And I went to the studio, and, you know, we were all drinking and having a good time, and somebody stands up and they're like, we're all getting tattooed by Lou tonight. I was like, what? So it was funny. I ended up just doing a WF like on a bunch of the artists. Cool. So it was like 7 or 8 artists that
the placa.
Yeah. I just did a little WF for World Famous on them, and a couple little stars around it, like old school style. And, you know, and everybody loved it. They had a blast and we took pictures and, you know, but it was fun. It was a good time, you know.
Really cool, man. Thanks a lot. So, unfortunately, we just hit an hour.
Wow, that went fast.
That went fast, right?
I said in the beginning, how what are we going to talk about for an hour?
I thought it was 10 minutes, but now it's like way less. Yeah, really cool. So, tradition in our podcast is this, that the guest has the last word. So if you want to greet somebody, if you want to get your Instagram handles, whatever, you can just feel free to do so now.
Sure. At World Famous Inc. is our Instagram handle, and I hope to meet you or see you sometime at a maybe Gods of Ink tattoo convention or somewhere in this world. And you know, just enjoy life and enjoy the art of tattooing, because it is such an amazing art. I think it's one of the most amazing arts in the world.
That's cool. Thank you so much, Lou, for being with me.
Thanks for having me here.
Yeah.
Ich hoffe, dass es euch Spaß gemacht hat. Ich hoffe, dass ihr euch gut unterhalten gefühlt habt und ein bisschen was mitnehmen konntet. Wenn ihr Rückfragen zu gewissen Themen habt, was auch immer, lasst es uns gerne wissen. Ansonsten würden wir uns sehr freuen, wenn ihr uns bei den gängigen Streaming-Portalen bewerten würdet. Erzählt auch gerne euren Freunden davon über einen Shoutout auf Instagram und anderen Social-Media-Kanälen. Freuen wir uns natürlich auch immer. Support ist kein Mord. Denkt dran. Vielen Dank fürs Zuhören. Wir hören uns nächste Woche wieder bei Tales from the Needle. Vielen Dank. Ciao.